Welcome to the Deep Dive. So imagine this for a second. A huge global institution, right? They quietly update one of their most important foundational documents.
The one they use to bring in new people.
Exactly. And then, the moment that update gets any kind of public attention, they just slam on the brakes, yank the change, and kind of pretend it never happened.
It's a fascinating thing to watch. It's almost like history rewriting itself in real time, and then someone comes along with, you know, institutional whiteout.
We are zooming in today on the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the LDS Church, and a really recent, very visible contradiction involving their keystone scripture, the Book of Mormon.
So for this deep dive, our mission is pretty clear. We want to understand what exactly was changed, why they reversed it so quickly.
And maybe most importantly, what this whole pattern of editing and then retreating tells us about the church's strategy right now, you know, for handling its own history in the age of the internet.
It all seems to trace back to decades of intellectual pressure, especially things like DNA studies.
Okay, let's jump right in. We're calling this first part the Disappearing Act. So around October of 2024, an update gets rolled out to a very specific app.
Right, this is important. It's the Book of Mormon
app, not the main gospel library that members use every day. This is the one missionaries use with people who are investigating the church.
And this change was, well, it was radical. The introduction was shortened dramatically.
It went from something like 561 words down to just 235.
The goal seems pretty obvious. You know, cut out the fluff, make it less intimidating, more approachable for someone who knows nothing about LDS history.
But the real story here is what they cut. It feels almost surgical.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just shorter. It seems like they went through and removed every single thing that critics have successfully used as a talking point for the past, what, 20 years?
Every single Googleable detail that might lead you to some, let's say, inconvenient information.
Exactly. The cuts were profound. So they completely removed the names Joseph Smith, the Nephites, the Lamanites, the Jaredites, all of them.
Gone. No mention of American Indians or Native Americans either.
And they stripped out the really physical parts of the story, too. The term gold plates is gone, and they even replaced the word translation.
Wait, if they removed translation, what did they put instead? I mean, that's a core part of the whole founding story.
Well, they shifted the focus. It went from a physical process to a purely divine one. The text now says the book was revealed by an angel and translated into modern language by the gift and power of God.
That is a massive semantic shift. It goes from a historical process to a generalized spiritual event.
This huge concession. And it wasn't just that. They took out specific places like Jerusalem, the Tower of Babel. Even the angel Moroni is just called an angel.
So what's left? What did they fill that space with?
It's all generalized Christian language. The new text mentions Jesus 4 times, God 7 times, and get this, the words you and your appear 21 times.
Wow. How many times do they appear in the old intro?
Zero.
So it's clearly all about making it a personal, internal journey for the reader, not a history lesson.
Precisely. And they even gutted the famous missionary pitch, Moroni's promise.
The big challenge at the end, to pray and ask God if the book is true. That's been the closer for decades.
Right. And that powerful, direct challenge was replaced with really soft, non-committal language. Instead of a promise, it's more like God will reveal the truth in his own way and in his own time.
And it ends with, may you find God on these pages.
It basically turns the introduction from a historical document with a challenge into, well, any other inspirational pamphlet.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting. As soon as this change got picked up by places like LDS Living, it started a firestorm of discussion online.
Especially in ex-Mormon spaces and among critics. And that visibility seems to have triggered a kind of institutional panic.
The backpedal was immediate and total.
First, that LDS Living article that reported on the change, it just vanished from the internet, completely scrubbed.
And second, the new intro text itself was removed from the main introduction section of the app. They put the old 2006 version right back in its place.
It appears they didn't delete the new text entirely, but sort of hit it. It got moved to a subsection called What is the Book of Mormon?
So the reaction itself, the speed of it, suggests they are incredibly sensitive to online scrutiny.
It seems less about member feedback and more about how the change was being framed by outsiders and former members. The minute their marketing strategy for investigators got critical public exposure, they retreated.
It makes you wonder, if this was only for investigators, why not just leave it? Why care what critics are saying?
Because the existence of two different introductions, a historical one for members and a generic one for investigators, exposes the strategy itself.
Ah, so critics can then point at that and say, see, they're hiding their own history from people they're trying to convert. It undermines the whole idea of transparency.
Exactly. And to really understand why they're even doing this, you have to realize this isn't a new pattern at all. This is just the latest step in a very long retreat.
So let's zoom out a bit. This kind of institutional sensitivity, it didn't just pop up overnight.
Not at all. To get the big picture, you really need to go back to the 1981 Book of Mormon introduction. That text made a very specific, very pivotal claim about the Lamanites.
It said they are the principal ancestors of the American Indians.
A claim that was, for a generation, the bedrock of the book's historicity. But it became, well, a huge problem with the emergence of DNA evidence in the early 2000s.
Right. This is a classic case of external, verifiable science directly contradicting a core religious claim.
You had scholars like anthropologist Thomas Murphy and even an LDS bishop, Simon Southerton, who wrote a book on it. They used genetic studies to show that Native American ancestry is overwhelmingly from Asia, not the Middle East.
And the church's initial reaction was pretty defensive, wasn't it? They kind of went after the messengers.
That's a good way to put it. It was harsh. Murphy was threatened with excommunication. Southerton, who was a geneticist and a sitting bishop, was excommunicated.
So the message was clear. Shut up.
But you can't excommunicate the data. The scientific pressure just kept building.
And that led directly to the 2006 change.
Yes. That year, they quietly updated the introduction. They didn't retract the claim, but they softened the language. They changed principal ancestors to among the ancestors of the American Indians.
That one word change is so critical. Principal means the main source. Mm. Among could mean anything. Mm. A tiny fraction. It's almost impossible to disprove.
It's a total recalibration. And what's really telling is that apologetic groups like Fair LDS openly admitted at the time that the change was necessary to make the intro compatible with current DNA evidence.
So they basically conceded the point.
Yeah.
They admitted science forced the change.
Right. And that establishes the pattern for you, the listener. External scholarly or scientific pressure forces a change to these foundational claims. And this recent disappearing act is just the next logical step in that long retreat.
The retreat has gone from changing one word in 2006 to now just removing all the specific names and concepts in 2024.
The strategy is shifting from small linguistic changes to this massive effort of, well, dehistoricization.
Which brings us back to that shift from translation to revelation. That fits perfectly with what we've been hearing from the church's top leaders for years now.
It's been a very systematic, very coordinated shift in rhetoric. You can look at President Russell M. Nelson's talk to new mission presidents back in 2016. He gave them a whole list of things the Book of Mormon is not.
He was incredibly direct. He said it's not a textbook of history. He went on to say it's not a definitive work on ancient American agriculture or politics.
And crucially, not a record of all former inhabitants of the Western Hemisphere.
It's like an institutional inoculation. It's telling missionaries up front that all the historical problems critics might bring up are irrelevant, because it was never meant to be a history book in the first place.
And we saw that reinforced just this year. Elder David A. Bednar said in General Conference that the Book of Mormon is not primarily a history book, rather, it looks to the future.
So the strategy is clear. Remove all the intellectual tripwires.
Exactly. The removal of Joseph Smith, the Nephites, the gold plates, the Tower of Babel, even reducing the Hill Cumorah to just a hillside. It's all about removing anything you can easily research and challenge outside of a faith context.
So what does that do to the Book of Mormon itself?
Mm-hmm.
It fundamentally transforms it into this generic and palatable Christian devotional text.
It's all about a personal connection to Jesus, which neatly sidesteps 200 years of messy, verifiable, and often problematic history.
And that's critical for global growth, isn't it?
Hmm.
It makes the book much easier to introduce in secular countries or in places like Africa, where a simple Christ-centered message is more appealing than a complex American restoration story.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the institutional pattern here. The speed of that reversal is so telling. This whole thing reflects years of an internal struggle over how to handle this information crisis.
The timing is everything. The backpedal happened right after that LDS Living article sparked all that discussion. It shows the leadership is watching these conversations very closely.
They tried a new marketing strategy, but when it hit the wrong audience, the critical audience, they had to pull back immediately.
And it's so ironic because this whole move is based on the intellectual groundwork of people they previously pushed out. We have to talk about Spencer Fluman.
Right, the former head of the Maxwell Institute.
Fluman was really the pioneer of this new approach. He advocated for something called pastoral apologetics.
Which basically means stop defending the book on its shaky historical facts and focus on its spiritual function.
Exactly. View it as Joseph's grandest revelation, not a literal history. The very language President Nelson and Elder Bednar are using today is essentially Fluman's thesis, just delivered from the pulpit.
But Fluman himself was reportedly pushed out in 2023 by the hardline traditionalists, the literalists, who thought he was being too candid about the historicity problems.
And that's the profound irony. It raises that classic question about the institution. Why does it so often punish its internal truth tellers, people like Fluman, only to later adopt their recommendations when they become necessary for survival?
The cycle seems to be, deny the problem, silence the person pointing out the problem, and then when you can't ignore it anymore, quietly adopt their solution.
It seems less like this was a mistake and more like a necessary retreat. The marketing plan got exposed and they had to pull it back. But the core strategy, the dehistoricization that is clearly still moving forward, just more quietly now.
So this deep dive really paints a clear picture. There's this constant tension between the church's original historical claims and the practical needs of its modern growth strategy.
Every time external pressure mounts, whether it's from DNA or the internet, they seem to remove another layer of historical specificity from their own foundational text.
The result is a Book of Mormon introduction that is, on the one hand, less true to its own origin story.
And on the other, far more appealing to the broader Christian world. It's a survival mechanism, really, driven by the fact that the original historical claims just aren't holding up to scrutiny.
So as we wrap up, here's a final provocative thought for you to consider. If the Book of Mormon is continually stripped of all its unique historical claims, Joseph Smith, gold plates, named civilizations, all in an effort to appeal to a wider audience.
What's the functional difference between the resulting Book of Mormon app and just any other inspirational Christian pamphlet you could pick up anywhere?
And maybe more importantly for the institution itself, is an identity that's built only on non-specific spiritual inspiration enough to sustain a community that is shrinking in its own heartland?
That really is the core conflict they're trying to manage with these rapid and sometimes pretty embarrassing revisions.
We encourage you to continue your own deep dives into the source material behind all these changes. Thank you for joining us on the Deep Dive.